Crean v. Harsco, Mr. Greenberg. Yes.
May it please the Court, Kenneth Gornberg for Harsco Corporation. Riley and Harsco entered into a contract that reasonably allocated the risk when either party used the other's equipment without written authorization. And that's exactly what happened here. Riley undisputedly used Harsco's scaffolding without written permission, and Section 4.8 of the contract specifically provides that in that circumstance, Riley is to defend and indemnify Harsco against any resulting loss or damage. That is exactly what happened because three Riley employees were involved in the use of Harsco scaffolding here. Riley had the sole opportunity and therefore the duty to prevent this accident, and that is precisely the allocation of risk, Section 4.8 of the contract, allocated to Riley. Now, the result of this was because Harsco was facing the uncertainty of liability merely because its scaffolding was used. It felt the prudent course, after many efforts to negotiate the matter among all parties, including Riley, and in fact inviting Riley to participate directly and financially in the settlement, Harsco concluded that its prudence was served by settling directly with the plaintiff.
So what happened in the original accident? They pulled a board out of a supply of boards to be used for scaffolding, and one was rotten?
We don't know exactly where the board originated. What we do know is Riley's employee, Boyd Smith, testified that he first obtained the board from a pallet supplied by Harsco. We don't know whether that's actually where he got that board. But then he did testify, and it's undisputed, that he used that board, among others, in erecting some of Riley's own scaffolding right next to some Harsco scaffolding. And then later that morning, two other Riley employees, Mr. Crean and his assistant, Mr. Logan, were going to work on undecked portion of Harsco's scaffolding, which Harsco was not obligated to deck. They were supposed to only deck the upper levels. Mr. Logan takes some planks from the Riley scaffolding built by Mr. Smith, moves them over to the undecked portion of the Harsco scaffolding. And it's one of those boards that was apparently defective, broke, and that caused Mr. Crean's injury. So when Harsco determined that it was necessary to settle that case, it sought direct financial contribution from Riley. Riley consistently refused, as it had throughout this litigation. And under the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision in Dominski from 2003, the consequences of Riley's failure to defend or indemnify Harsco at any stage are that, frankly, Riley cannot even challenge anything further about that settlement or its coverage within the indemnity agreement. It is obligated to that settlement. Is also obligated because it breached its duty to defend under the indemnity agreement. Riley is obligated to pay Harsco's litigation expenses. And further, Wisconsin authorities provide that those litigation expenses include not only the direct defense of the plaintiff's action, but also the expenses for enforcing its indemnity obligations. So, frankly, Your Honors, that really resolves this entire argument here on behalf of Harsco. We could certainly delve into all of the details of the various arguments that Riley has offered
Their main argument, I take it, is the deletion of Article 9. Isn't that what they particularly focus on?
That is a very major part of their argument, Your Honor, and it is exactly, I think, one of the primary flaws in the district court's analysis, which is really quite twisted. They look at the partial deletion of Article 9. It's not an entire deletion of Article 9, And they say that that means that the reference, that because Section 4.8 refers to Article 9, therefore Section 4.8 has no effect. There are several flaws to that. First of all, it ignores the obvious point that on the very same page as 4.8, the parties expressly lined out entire other sections of the contract, which demonstrates that they meant for Section 4.8 to remain and to have effect. And they did the same thing with the reciprocal provision 3.25, which runs in Riley's favor. Again, they struck other provisions but kept 3.25 on that same page.
Article 9 ran only in favor, the indemnity provisions of Article 9 ran only in favor of Riley, didn't it?
The original form provisions in Article 9 did run in favor only of Riley. That is correct, Your
Honor. That's what was deleted.
Right. And they, so that was a fairly general indemnity running in favor of Riley. What they did really was then they replaced it with another general indemnity running in favor of Riley. And that's in Exhibit A to the contract, Section I. And that Section I indemnity modifies, it's a little different from the original indemnity in Section 9, but it is the same concept that what results is you have an indemnity in Section 3.25 that runs in favor of Riley solely in the limited circumstance where Harsco would use Riley's equipment without permission. Then Section 4.8, the one we're relying on, which runs in favor of Harsco solely in the situation where Riley uses Harsco's equipment without written authorization. And then Section I, just like Article 9 originally, runs in favor of Harsco in all other circumstances. So the problem with Riley's argument and the district court's construction was eliminating Sections 3.25 and 4.8 entirely. That, of course, violates every rule of contract construction, including as held by Wisconsin courts routinely, that every provision in a contract must be given effect if at all possible. Harsco has consistently articulated the only interpretations that allow all three of these indemnity provisions to remain effective. Now, certainly, Riley has offered a number of other arguments, such as whether the indemnity covers Harsco's own negligence, whether it covers strict liability. These are all, I would respectfully submit, under Dominski, purely academic questions, because the settlement, which occurs without any finding of negligence or strict liability, forecloses those inquiries, because what we're seeking indemnity for is a settlement, not for negligence, not for strict liability. But even if we had to endeavor into those analyses, under Wisconsin law, it is pretty clear that this indemnity in Section 4.8 would cover Harsco's negligence in this circumstance, and that's pretty clear because Section 4.8 has an important exception. It says, except in the circumstance where Harsco is negligent in operating its own equipment. And that means that every other way that Harsco could be negligent is covered by that indemnity. So that makes that indemnity plainly covering Harsco's alleged negligence here. And as for strict liability, Wisconsin's version of strict product liability is held by Wisconsin Supreme Court not to be based on negligence at all. It's based on the state of the product, and therefore there is no prohibition on indemnification for strict liability, and it too is covered by this indemnity. The only other argument that Riley raised was the fact that it is ordinarily immune from suit under the workers' compensation statutes in Wisconsin, as it occurs in many other states. Problem for Riley is it also plainly admits that the language in Section 4.8 is indistinguishable from the language in cases such as Schaub from the Wisconsin Appellate Court in 1995, with broad language saying that any and all claims includes workers' compensation claims. Riley is left to resort to the district court's interpretation, which Riley had never articulated before, that again refers to Section I, the general indemnity. And the fatal flaw in that analysis is that there is a very express workers' compensation waiver in Section I, but that is expressly only for Section I. And therefore, the interpretation of Section 4.8, like Section 3.25, that allows for workers' compensation immunity to be waived, is not affected by anything in Section I. So the waiver that we see in Section 4.8 is perfectly valid. Our interpretation preserves all three indemnities. As I noted at the outset, under the Dominski case, Riley is bound by Harsco's settlement. That's the amount of $900,000. This court, on de novo review of summary judgment, can enter summary judgment for Harsco in that amount right there. And in addition, the attorney's fees are also covered under the Dominski case, and Harsco had previously submitted evidence, undisputed by Riley, of attorney's fees in the amount of $262,000 and change through October of 2012. We would ask that that amount be awarded and that we be remanded to the district court for the submission of additional attorney's fees. And the same would be true of prejudgment interest in an amount that was approximately $15,000 as of the time of the prior briefing. But again, we would seek remand to add additional prejudgment interest. If the court has no further questions at this time, I'll be happy to reserve the rest of my comments for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Greenberg. Mr. Pitluck?
May it please the court, Paul Pitluck on behalf of Riley Construction. Public policy considerations generally disfavor a party being indemnified for their own fault and tort. For that reason, Wisconsin law requires a party seeking to be indemnified for their own fault to set forth that indemnification in a contract provision that is express and specific and clear and unequivocal.
Isn't this a form that you all wrote, the contract here?
It's a standard industry form from a trade group.
But it's all about Riley, right? Riley and the contractor.
Both parties had give and take in modifying the contract.
I'm trying to understand, though, is your position that 4.8 was not sufficiently conspicuous for you when you wrote it?
The problem with conspicuity of that provision is that it's not the indemnification provision. The indemnification provision is Article 9, which refers to Exhibit 8.
What is 4.8?
4.8 deals with one party's use of the other party's equipment at
the
job site.
Indemnification obligation, right?
Uses the word indemnify,
but not. We did put forth that argument because Wisconsin law does require, and we think it's more of a bright line rule that if you're going to do that, you better put indemnification in the heading of that section, and
No. That's ridiculous.
When you guys write it, it's a little hard to understand. So, okay.
Well, here, rather than express and specific and clear and unequivocal contract language that would require Riley to indemnify Harsco, even for Harsco's own fault, what we have is Article 4.8, Article 9, and Exhibit 8.
Is 4.8 badly drafted? Is that what you're saying?
I think what happened is we see the classic case of two parties trying to use a form agreement and modify it to a particular project, and you have some disconnect and maybe some lack of clarity because of that.
What's unclear in 4.8?
Well, what's unclear in 4.8 is that it says that Riley will defend and indemnify and be liable to Harsco as provided in Article 9. So it specifically says if we're going to give you indemnity, if we're going to give you a defense, we're going to give it to you like we're setting forth in Article 9.
Yeah, but then the guts of Article 9 were ripped out. So
and
what's left of 4.8?
Well, you're still in Article 9. They still say see Exhibit A. That's what took the place of what was in Article 9. And Exhibit A says, here's the indemnity, and it's going to be Harsco providing that indemnity to Riley, not the other way around. And Harsco, you go out and you get the insurance for these liabilities. Contracting parties, especially in construction contracts, often want to avoid having these infighting about...
So your proposition, Riley has no matter what it does, it doesn't have to indemnify Harsco?
I'm saying that...
No, you answer yes or no.
Under these the terms of this contract, yes.
No,
it has
that's unconscionable.
Well, it's what the parties agreed to in allocating the risk here.
No. That's absurd.
Attorney Gordon?
That's absurd, right? So you screw up and you have no indemnification obligation, right?
It
could cause tremendous damage to Harsco, like this very substantial liability to the injured worker. And even if it's entirely your fault, you walk away
But in this case, the fault was Harsco that led to them settling with the plaintiff.
Do we know that?
Well, we don't know it as a fact finding.
Yeah.
But Riley could not be liable to Mr. Crine. He is our employee. We are his employer. We are immune from suit. There is no liability that we would have to Mr. Crine for this injury. So when Harsco settles, they're settling it based upon their perceived fault for that accident. And what we're saying is we don't indemnify their fault. There is nothing about their fault that we have to take care of under this contract.
4.8 said that. 4.8 didn't have this qualification you're suggesting.
4.8 says the indemnity will be as provided in Article 9, and Article 9 says
Article
here's...
Article 9 got eviscerated.
But even if... the problem is that the 4.8 reference to Article 9 is kind of incoherent, even if Article 9 had been left in place, because that ran only in favor of Riley, right?
Again, and that's the parties.
But you would, so you would have us treat 4.8 as if it didn't exist?
No, I would say, just like 3.25 and 4.8, standard provisions to a contract, the parties say if these types of events happen at the scene, we're going to handle them. How are we going to handle them? We're going to set up an indemnity, an insurance clause in the contract that says this is how it's going to be handled. In that Exhibit A, it's not just an indemnification running in favor of Riley. It's a requirement that Harsco go out and get insurance. Buy insurance so this is covered. Make Riley an additional insured under the policy so that this is covered. That's what the parties contracted to. That's what they contemplated by saying, look to Article 9, and Article 9 says look to Exhibit A. And Wisconsin law is very clear. When you're looking at indemnity agreements, the courts and McCula and Herstreiter and Haircloth and Heritage Mutual all said in our brief, they said where there is a question about who indemnifies who and at what level, look to see who bought the insurance and who the insurance was supposed to cover. That manifests the intent of the parties as to who is going to cover a loss. And again, in construction contracts, it happens all the time. The parties don't want to be infighting. They want to say, you go out and get the insurance to cover this loss. It's exactly what happened here. And it's entirely consistent with Wisconsin law that says, look to who was required to get the insurance in terms of who was going to provide the indemnity at the job site. Counsel for Harsco indicated that it's one of the purposes of contract interpretation is to give effect to every provision. Well, in effect, they're saying, let's just cross out that provision that says, as provided in Article 9, out of Section 4.8. Let's just cross it out. Because how do you give effect to that if you have to go to Article 9 to find out what indemnities and what insurance is going to be provided? It's our provision that the party said, go look to that Article 9. And now we've crafted Exhibit A that says Harsco's going to get the insurance, Harsco's going to provide the indemnity under these circumstances. That's what the contract means. You have to cross out, as provided in Article 9, from that clause in order to give effect to what Harsco wants. And that is where they're trying to be indemnified for their own fault, and it's to be strictly construed against them. So if we're looking at, yeah, this contract doesn't all add up, it all doesn't connect, there's some disconnect between a couple of the clauses, that's construed against the party seeking to be indemnified for their own fault. That's Harsco. When you construe it the way we say, in the light that we're entitled to, you look to Exhibit A.
You're taking no responsibility for having botched the contract drafting.
Well, there's two parties to a contract.
Yeah, but you wrote it.
Both parties participated.
You botched it, right? You botched 4.8.
I don't think so. I think the parties intended to say indemnity is going to be provided as in Article 9. That's what the contract says.
And then you went and mutilated 9.
With respect to the workers' compensation immunity portion of the argument, again, it's an essential part of the workers' compensation process under Wisconsin law that the employer concedes without fault that he has to take care of the employee. He has to pay the medical bills. He has to pay the wage loss. He has to pay the disability. But in return for that, he gets immunity from a tort suit. And just like in the case of an indemnity contract that seeks indemnity for one's own tort fault, the waiver of a Wisconsin work comp immunity has to be express and clear waiver. And for the same reasons we've articulated in the indemnification agreements, this is not express and clear enough. And in a
so
court,
was shall wrong?
No, you can waive work comp immunity.
Right.
We're just saying in this case, it's not clear enough.
Was it any clearer? Was it any clearer in shall than it is here?
I don't think Schaub had a provision that said the other party's going to indemnify and provide insurance for the employer.
Now you emphasize the Exhibit A, the insurance provision.
Yes.
Now, was Harsco entirely? Did Harsco comply with that provision?
I believe they did. I don't think there's ever been a dispute that they failed to provide the insurance required.
Was the insurance inadequate to pay Crean?
I'm not sure what funds paid Crean's settlement. We weren't part of
well,
that.
Well, if their insurance paid Crean entirely, why would they be suing you?
They want to be reimbursed. I believe there may be some element of self-insurance, in other words, a deductible or a self-insured retention. I don't want to speak for Harsco's counsel.
Are you saying they didn't comply with Exhibit A?
No. I'm saying, but they were to assume the risk under Exhibit A.
No, Exhibit A specifies insurance that they agree to take out, right?
I agree.
Now, are you saying they didn't take out the insurance they were supposed to take out?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that through whatever funds, be it insurance or a part of a self-insured program, Harsco made payment to Crean, and now they're seeking reimbursement from my client. And we're saying they took on that responsibility.
Well, it's very confusing. If the insurance company paid, they can't seek indemnity if they've been insured. Be the insurance company.
I think you're going to have to ask Harsco's counsel as to the source of that funding. I don't know. All I know is they're trying to get it back from my client.
Right.
With respect to whether this is a product liability claim or a negligence claim, I don't think there's any distinction. The same public policy applies. We disfavor parties getting indemnified for their own fault. I mean, if Harsco supplied a rotten plank to the job site, they should answer to that. And I think that the contract allows for them to answer for that.
One kind of odd thing about that, though, is if I understand the facts here, I mean, in construction, you're going to have some bad materials delivered, right? And you expect skilled tradesmen to recognize that and not install it. But that all got bypassed. Harsco's ability to prevent that from happening was bypassed because of what your employees did, right?
As the facts have been laid out in the record, Riley's own employees were manipulating
them. It's a little hard to see fault here on Harsco's part.
Well, there's no determination of fault. This case was settled before there was a hearing on who bore the fault for this. I'm not saying Riley didn't have negligent conduct. Riley couldn't get sued by Crine, so that wasn't the issue. The issue is contractual here. And that is, can they get indemnified for their own fault?
Now, you say you said you disapprove of indemnity for one's bad acts. Is that what you said? Shouldn't be indemnity. I mean,
you shouldn't be indemnified for your own tort.
Right. That, of course, is called liability insurance. So I tell you, you disapprove of liability insurance.
I like liability insurance,
well,
and I like it
like
when
liability insurance. It's a form of indemnification of a company for its bad acts. You said you disapproved of that. Now you say you approve of it.
No, it's allocation of a risk to a company that takes a profit.
Liability insurance is you shift to the insurance company the cost of your torts, right?
I agree with
and
that.
You don't approve of something like that. Right?
It's
indemnification for your torts.
I think if you contract it away properly, you can do it. If Harsco had contracted it away properly here, they could do it. They don't have the clear and unequivocal language. The fact that we're debating Article 4.8 saying it doesn't make sense in all respects when you compare it to Article 9 and Exhibit A tells you that it's not clear and it's not unequivocal. And if you construe it against the party who's seeking to be indemnified for their own fault,
you construe against the drafter of the contract.
But in the case of an indemnification clause seeking to indemnify someone for their own fault and tort, it's construed against them.
Liability insurance contracts are not construed against the insured. They're construed against the insurer.
The liability carrier is not a tortfeasor. They're a contractor party who's trying to profit by bargaining that risk management. They're not in the same position as a tortfeasor. Here, if you want to talk about indemnity insurance...
Wait, you've lost the point. You said indemnifying for someone's wrongs is bad. Getting indemnity for the wrongful things you do is bad. That, of course, is what liability insurance is for, to indemnify people who have committed torts. Right? And that's considered perfectly proper. And those contracts, which are indemnity contracts, are construed in favor of the insured, not the insurer.
I agree with everything you say. This is not an insured situation. It's two alleged tortfeasors.
What difference does it make? Insurance is just a form of indemnification.
Well, it is different because one takes on a contract and takes a profit and takes a fee for managing that risk. That's the insurance company. Here you have two individuals to a contract trying to allocate the risk, and again, who was required in this case to get the insurance to cover that risk? That's Harsco. And that's where our courts look to determine what the intent was on the indemnity as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pippler. So, Mr. Greenberg, what about this question, where the money came from, the $900,000 to pay Crean?
Harsco paid that directly, Your Honor. And interestingly also...
But you were required to take out insurance, right, in Exhibit A?
And we did. And the thing that Mr. Pitlick, I think, was trying to articulate there was that when you're required to provide insurance on behalf of somebody else, and notably make them an additional insured, that would influence the interpretation of the indemnity. That may be, But there's a really important problem in the facts here for Mr. Pitlick's argument, which is they never tendered this case to Harsco or its insurer, ever. And that underscores that they recognize, I believe, the problems with their own argument. All of these indemnities have to have effect. And we, again, have made it very clear how that happens. The general indemnity applies in, which runs in favor of Riley, applies in circumstances other than the two that are specifically addressed by the reciprocal 3.25 and 4.8 that address the unauthorized use of the other's equipment. 4.8 is the one that runs in favor of Harsco when Riley uses Harsco's equipment without express written permission. That's exactly what happened. That's why this case is covered, and Riley is required to defend and indemnify Harsco. The other interesting thing about insurance, Your Honors, is that reference to Article 9 was not completely eviscerated with all of the deletions, additions, subtractions, etc. There's another part of Article 9 that remains, which deals with, it says that if the parties, someone purchases builder's risk insurance, which is a form of property insurance, then that limits the two indemnities, 3.25 and 4.8. So in other words, if Harsco's own equipment had been damaged in this accident, Harsco could not get the indemnity from Riley in that circumstance because Harsco would just turn to the builder's risk insurance. Now, as it so happens, as far as I know, no builder's risk insurance was purchased. But the contract contemplated that. And that part of the contract makes the reference to Article 9 in those other two indemnities perfectly rational and preserves meaning to every word in the contract. Final point I'd like to make to Your Honors is, as far as the workers' compensation indemnity, it should not be lost by this court, I believe, that under Wisconsin's workers' compensation statute, when you're going to settle a claim like this, you have to follow a specific formula for allocating the settlement to various parties, including the workers' compensation insurer. Riley's insurer got a piece of this settlement under a statutory formula, signed off by Riley, by their insurer, by all parties, and approved by the district court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much to both counsel. Our next